Well, that concludes our service for today. Thank you, and thank you to the band, too. It's just remarkable, so wonderful. Thank you. Oh, so the name of my message this morning is Mother May I, and I sort of don't know why I picked that topic. It just seemed like a good idea at the time. You know, have you guys played that game as kids, Mother May I? It's kind of sadistic, isn't it? I mean, I think there's two versions of it, but the East Coast version of it where I grew up is somebody is like the mother, more like the empress, right? And the mother says, Vicky, you may take two umbrella steps, whatever that is. And if Vicky takes the steps, she has to go all the way to the back. But if she says, may I, then she can take the steps, right? It's kind of cold, and it's very arbitrary, don't you think? Yeah. So, you know, I was thinking about the idea of Mother May I, and I was thinking about how we kind of project this demanding mother sometimes onto God, the divine feminine, or what have you. And I was thinking about this this group that I'm part of. It's this international phone call that I do every Friday morning with people all over the world, people that I met in India and that happen to live all over the world. And I was reading what one of them wrote on this group feed that we have. And she was talking about this situation where she was at her parents' house and she was trying to make her mother happy and how difficult it was. And I'm reading it, and I'm reading it, and I'm reading it, and other people are chiming in on their comments. And it occurred to me, wow, Bonnie, you're pushing 60. And your mother isn't even on this planet anymore, and yet there's a little part of you that wants your mother to be proud of you. Am I right? I think there's a part of all of us that still wants our mother to be proud of us. And I know that there's good parenting and there's faulty parenting. That is largely because, guess what? Mothers are human. But I'm going to read you a story. Kind of a Mother's Day tradition for me that I pull out from time to time. And this to me is the metaphor of mothering and also the metaphor of our relationship with the divine, with wholeness, with grace. Some of you may know this story. You may have read it to your children. I gave it to my great nephew, and my sister tried to read it too and cried through the whole thing. So anyway, I'm going to go ahead and read it, part of it. It's Runaway Bunny by Margaret Wise Brown. Okay. And think of this as a metaphor, okay? The bunny is all of us, and the mother bunny is spirit, the divine. Once there was a little bunny who wanted to run away, so he said to his mother, I am running away. If you run away, said his mother, I will run after you, for you are my little bunny. If you run after me, said the little bunny, I will become a fish in a trout stream, and I will swim away from you. If you become a fish in a trout stream, said his mother, I will become a fisherman, and I will fish for you. If you become a fisherman, said the little bunny, I will become a rock on the mountain high above you. If you become a rock on the mountain high above me, said his mother, I will be a mountain climber, and I will climb to where you are. If you become a mountain climber, said the little bunny, I will be a crocus in a hidden garden. If you become a crocus in a hidden garden, said his mother, I will be a gardener and I will find you. And so on and so on and so on. If you are a gardener and find me, said the little bunny, I will be a bird and fly away from you. If you become a bird and fly away from me, said his mother, I will be a tree that you come home to. And it goes on like this for a while, and the bunny joins a circus, and the mother says she'll be a tightrope walker and walk across the air to get the bunny. And finally, the little bunny says, I will become a little boy and run into a house. And the mother says, if you become a little boy and run into a house, said the mother bunny, I will become your mother and catch you in my arms and hug you. Shucks, said the little bunny. I might as well just stay where I am and be your little bunny. And so he did. Have a carrot, said the mother bunny. And so it is. So like I said, that's a metaphor. That's a metaphor between us and God. You know, and I read that story, us and the divine, or us and love. We are a center of love where we be love, share love, and serve love. And we spend a lot of time running away from love. You know, I read that story and I thought about that phrase that we say a lot in this teaching, that you can't outgive God, right? And the truth is also is that you can't outlove love. I always wondered what that meant. It just happened today as I was looking through some emails. I had written a blog where I thought I was giving something to the world. I wrote about kindness and how it ripples, and I thought I'm giving something to the people who read my blog. I'm giving something to Sue, who was featured in my blog this week with something that she wrote. She gave she bought ice cream for four monks wearing saffron robes. How about that? And they were soaking wet because they had been kayaking. Isn't that cool? But anyway, I wrote this blog. I thought I was giving something, and then I read the comments, and this guy that knows me from India commented, and he talked about how my ripples of kindness are still affecting people in India. It was like, wait a minute, I was supposed to be the giver here, and now you're making me into the receiver. And that's how the relationship is with the divine. That's how the relationship is with love. That's how the relationship is with spirit. That's how the relationship is with the mother bunny known as grace and known as wholeness. Love has one condition. Does anybody know what that condition is? Unconditional love has one condition. The condition is that we must receive it. We can't keep running away from it if we want to receive it. Now, you may ask, how do I receive unconditional love? Well, I have a handy-dandy tip for you. This book that we're looking at called The Holy Trinity and the Law of Three, Discovering the Radical Truth at the Heart of Christianity. By the way, I don't know if we're a Christian church or not. I don't think we are, but I don't really care one way or the other. I haven't decided yet. I don't know. We bless all paths to God, so whatever. Anyway, this book is about something called the Law of Three, and the Law of Three is actually something that I'll recap what I talked about last week. It's something that George Gurdjieff, who's an Armenian scholar, made popular, and then this woman, Cynthia Bourgeau, who is an Episcopal priest, she is bringing it into sort of the popular vernacular by giving us a clearer way of understanding it, and she likens it to the Christian Trinity. One of the things that she says about it, which I think is so beautiful, says that Christian theology has been kind of missing out because we don't really understand what the Trinity is. She says, within a theological formula, we recite mostly on autopilot, in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost, right? Holy Spirit, whatever. There lies a powerful metaphysical principle that could change our understanding of life and give us the tools so long and so sorely needed to reunite our shattered cosmology, rekindle our visionary imagination, and cooperate consciously with the manifestation of the kingdom of heaven on earth here and now. This principle is called the Law of Three, and the Trinity is largely about practice. It encapsulates a paradigm of change and transformation based on an ancient metaphysical principle known as the Law of Three. The Law of Three is a good thing. It's a very good thing. And we're missing out if we don't use it. The Law of Three is one of the ways that we can reconnect ourselves to that wholeness that was epitomized by the Mother Bunny that is always reaching out for us. When we practice the Law of Three, we are reaching out to the wholeness that is always reaching for us. Have you ever heard of Esther Hicks, who says, well-being is tracking you? Well, wholeness is tracking us as well. Wholeness is after us. Wholeness wants us to say yes. And the Law of Three is one of the ways of getting there, getting to that yes place where we invite the wholeness that is available for all of us. Again, to recap what the Law of Three actually is that generally in a creative process, there is an affirming factor, which is pushing this way, and there is a denying factor, which is somewhat resisting the affirming factor. And then there is a reconciling factor that reconciles the two of them and creates an entirely new creation. The example that I used in church last Sunday was the north-going Zacks from Dr. Seuss and the south-going Zacks, right? And they were pushing up against each other. And in that story, it was never reconciled. We had a Law of Three experience in the class that I'm teaching about this book. I'm teaching a book called We Three, which is about the Law of Three. I'm teaching a class called We Three, which is about the Law of Three. And it's a really full class, and we actually happen to be out of books at the moment. And if you ask me if you can join the class, it's really full. We're out of books. So if you ask me, I'll probably have to say yes, because I can't control myself. Making spiritual teaching accessible and Starbucks chocolate chip cookies are two of my proud addictions, by the way. But anyway, we were out of books. There were four people that didn't have books. And in the past, I would have been like, okay, the affirming factor is that these people need to get books. The denying factor is that we don't have enough books. These things are pushing up against each other. And the whole class took a breath. And some of the people who had books gave them to the people who didn't have books and said that they would get their books on Kindle. So it works like that. And that's a really simple thing, but it can work for really big things too, really challenging things, global problems, personal problems, relationship problems. It works if you work it. And that's part of the joy of coming together in this vortex, in the center of love, where we can help each other work with principles like the Law of Three. In the class on Thursday night, I asked people to define the word reconcile. What does reconcile mean to you? And I heard that some people feel that reconciling is not a good word. That reconciling means begrudging surrender. And it certainly can mean that in terms of the Law of Three, because sometimes your ego does not want to give up the position that you're currently holding. I'll say more about that in a little bit. But to me, reconciling means coming into an alignment. You know, like when you reconcile your checking account, if you do that, does anybody do that? Okay. If you reconcile your checking account and you bring it into integrity, you bring it into an alignment. And integrity is another word for wholeness. So reconciling is stepping into this greater picture of wholeness that contains vaster possibilities than you could imagine. Okay? So that's what the Law of Three is. The question still remains, though. Something is pushing this way, something is pushing that way. How do I actually reconcile to create something new? In the story of the north-going Zacks and the south-going Zacks, you know, they couldn't step to the right or the left. The reconciliation that I suggested last week was that they do a plié. One of them does a plié. Nice that I'm wearing a skirt today. One of them does a plié and the other one crawls through his legs, right? There are infinite solutions for everything. We just can't see them because we're so busy pushing in one direction. But so how do we let go of that? Because that is our human tendency, is to think that we're right. Have you noticed that? Maybe not you per se, but others insist that they're right when they are clearly wrong. One of the things that happens with the Law of Three, I think, is that people think that you need somebody else to practice the Law of Three with you, and it is, in my experience, it is mostly an inside job. A while back, we have sort of renegotiated our relationship with our homeless brothers and sisters that come to this property, and we give them things, and we give them food, and we give them blankets. And there was a homeless gentleman who was stealing something from the church. And rather than go up to him and say, "Hello, sir," he was also quite high on, I think, felt methy to me. But anyway, instead of saying, "Hello, sir, let's practice the Law of Three together so you can stop stealing our stuff." I practiced on myself first, and then I was able to approach him in a very kind and gentle way. And he did actually give the stuff back, by the way. When we're practicing the Law of Three, much of the work is inner. So I'm going to give you four things that I do when I practice the Law of Three in myself. Identify what I want and what seems to be in the way of what I want. Okay? That's where we start. And then take a moment to work with those conditions. Identifying what you want and what is in the way of what you want is looking at the givens of a situation and not pretending that this thing that you don't want isn't happening. That's what we've done in old metaphysics, and we don't have to do that anymore, at least not in this church. We don't have to pretend that what we don't want doesn't exist, okay? Because it does. It's real. There it is. Hello. It's there for us. So identify the givens. What is it that I want? What is it that it seems to be getting in the way of I want? This is the affirming, this is the denying factor. And then pause. How simple is that, just to pause? How unusual is that, just to pause? I have a friend who lives in the Philippines, and she says every time she comes up against something, and every time she feels her mind start to worry, and every time she starts to think that there is something against her, she will just pause, and she'll take 5 breaths. Not 2 breaths, not 3 breaths, not 4 breaths. She says it takes 5 breaths for her to get to a place where there is some spaciousness around what she's holding, the conditions that she's holding. So pause and take 5 breaths, if you will. Or if you need to take 7 breaths, take 7 breaths. Or if you can only, if you can take 2 breaths, take 2 breaths. The point is to pause and let a little bit of spaciousness come into this appearance of opposition. Okay? The next thing is respect. Respect the obstacle. If it's a conflict with another person, respect that person's opinion. That person's opinion was formed through all of the conditions in their life that brought them to that place. You don't have to agree with it, but you have to respect how they got there. This is a quote from Timber Hawkeye. Timber Hawkeye, who is a Buddhist monk who is coming on June 24th, I believe, he wrote, "You don't have to agree with, only learn to live peacefully with other people's freedom of choice." This includes, but is not limited to, political views, religious beliefs, dietary restrictions. Have you ever heard about like the vegans that like put out death threats for people who were eating animals? It's a true story. Okay, and I'm not vegan, but I'm vegetarian for the most part. Dietary restrictions, matters of the heart, career paths, and mental afflictions. Our opinions and beliefs tend to change depending on time, place, and circumstance. And since we all experience life differently, there are multiple theories on what's best, what's moral, what's right, and what's wrong. It is important to remember that other people's perspective on reality is as valid as your own. Ooh. Did I hear a group grimace? Yeah. It's hard, you know, if it doesn't feel like their experience is as valid as your own, you can at least acknowledge that they got to that place through the conditions in their life that brought them there. And that they may not be trying to be bad or evil on purpose or to work your nerves on purpose, that they are just there because they're there, because all of the conditions that brought them there. So pause and respect. The third thing I'm going to invite you to do is to appreciate. Appreciate the obstacle. There comes a time, as you practice this long enough, that if an obstacle comes up, you say, wow, this is an obstacle. This is going to cause me to go deeper. This is going to cause me to learn something new. This is going to cause me to move into the mystery. This is going to cause me to give birth to something wonderful. This is going to cause me to have to reach into my soul and see where I am still blocked in terms of accepting the wholeness of reality. So we appreciate the obstacle for what it is. Cynthia Bourgeau in her book says that the obstacle is never the enemy, it is our friend. It is there to help us go deeper and to find a deeper appreciation of what is. So we pause, we respect, and we appreciate, and then we yearn. We yearn. From the 42nd Psalm, as the deer longs for water, so doth my heart long for God. If the Bible doesn't work for you, think as, insert your name, I'll say Reverend Bonnie longs for that first cup of coffee in the morning. So I really want it. I quit caffeine for a long time and now I'm so addicted again. Anyway, enough about me. As Reverend Bonnie longs for that first cup of coffee in the morning, so does my soul long for wholeness. I wish that was true. I kind of want the caffeine more sometimes, but really, it is true, because as you start practicing wholeness, as you start practicing the law of three, as you start recognizing that mother bunny, that beautiful, beautiful essence that is there for us, that is waiting for us to accept it, then your soul and your song long for wholeness. And you will do anything to get that wholeness, including practicing the principles of the law of three, identifying the affirming and denying factors, and reconciling to create something new. This is all very sort of intellectual at the moment, but I practice it a lot, and it has changed my life immeasurably. I find that I can move into conflicts and disagreements in a much more centered place. And I'm going to tell you about one of my early practices with the Law of Three so that some of these principles, pause, respect, appreciate, and yearn will make sense in a concrete way. This happened a couple of years ago when I was invited to a party by a friend who drinks a lot. And I don't drink anymore because I used to get hangovers as I was drinking, so I decided that it was just really not worth it. And when this friend drinks a lot, she gets a bit difficult for me to be around. So, and I had told her that. I had told her I don't necessarily like to be around people when they're drinking. And I thought I was saying something to the effect of, I don't like sushi. You know, it wasn't charged for me at all. I don't like sushi. I don't really like sauerkraut. But she took it very personally, right? So we got through that. And then she invited me to her party, to a birthday party. And I knew that she was going to be drinking a lot. And I knew that there were going to be a lot of other people that were drinking a lot. And I thought, oh, what do I do? What do I do? Do I have a conversation with her? Do I tell her I can't go? Do I lie? Do I make up some excuse? Do I tell her that she has to stop drinking? What do I do? You know? And so I did. I practiced the Law of Three by myself. In my own heart, I practiced the Law of Three. I paused. I took the five deep breaths. I put a little spaciousness around it and saying, all of this stuff swimming around, all of these things that you think that you have to do to make it right for you and make it right for her, all of these things are pointing to something greater. And I respected her right to drink. You know, the thing is that she has the right to drink as much as she wants in her own home. She wasn't going to be driving anywhere. She could get as drunk as she wants, and it doesn't matter to me how much she drinks. But at the same time, remember last week I was speaking about holding your nose, right? You hold you hold your no, right? I also realized that sober people have rights too, right? So she can drink as much as she wants, but I can also be as sober as I want. And if her drinking has a negative effect on me, where it feels like I'm throwing my pearls before swine, that's the image that kept coming up for me, then I get to say no to that as well. Not unkindly, just taking care of my own boundaries and my own spaciousness, and because of the work I do, the need that I have to keep my energy fairly pure and pristine. Okay, so that was the respect for myself and for her. The appreciation was, again, the knowing that something good was going to come out of this. I didn't know what it was, but I knew that something good was going to come out of this because of the inner dialogue that I was going through. And then why the yearning for wholeness, just to know that the something good was going to be better than I thought. So I did all of this inner work before I approached her, and then I was able to approach her in a very civilized manner. And I basically said to her, you know, it's your birthday. If you want to drink all you can, all you want, Knock yourself out. That is fine. Just go for it. However, these are my parameters. I probably will not be able to stay very long if you're getting crazy drunk, because it just doesn't work for me. And what happened is that we reached something that was greater than a compromise. The third force tries to take us beyond compromise into a win-win. And what she decided to do was to not drink that evening. And what happened because of that was that there was somebody there that was in great pain, and because nobody was drinking, we were all very present for that person who was in great pain, and we were able to hold a circle where that person felt healed and held and heard. So you get it? That's how the third force works. The third force knows beyond our current vision. The third force knows the future as it knows the past, and the third force can move through us and create miracles if we allow it, if we do the work. Because again, it works if you work it. So, in your life, if you can identify a place where you are feeling a conflict, either an inner conflict or an outer conflict, it works for both, but do the inner work first this week. We may talk a little bit more later on about doing the outer work of creating community, but this week, do the inner work. Pause. Notice where you are in conflict. Often the conflict for good people like us is, this is how I should feel, however, this is how I actually feel. Hold those two things in dynamic tension and just pause and breathe and allow some spaciousness to come around them. Then respect how you think you should feel and why you're there, and also respect how you actually feel. And then appreciate. Know that this is coming into being because something greater wants to manifest through you. This apparent inner or outer conflict is there for you. It is not against you. and then yearn. Yearn for that beautiful, beautiful solution that is not only a win-win, that is not only a compromise, that is not only a win-win, but it brings you into this mystery of goodness that is so powerful and so beyond our imagination and so godly and so lovely. That's what the third force is. Now you may have noticed that pause, respect, appreciate, and yearn. Four letters, P-R-A-Y. I know, I'm so clever. That's one way you can cut to the chase. Because the way that we pray in this particular system, and you can pray in whatever way you want, but when we pray, we first align ourselves with this ultimate mother bunny, with this ultimate grace and this goodness that is there for us. And then we realize that we are respectful of all of the wholeness. We align ourselves with the wholeness. We are respectful with all of the different facets of wholeness. And then we appreciate what is happening right now. And we know something better. We start to yearn for something better. And then we give thanks for it. And then we let it go. Don't forget to let it go or it will get stuck, as my friend Mark LaPonte says. That's a joke, by the way. It doesn't really get stuck. So I hope you all practice this, because I really feel that we have a great amount of potential here in this spiritual center, in this community, that we really are, without having to change the sign, creating a center of reconciliation. Reconciliation is part of love. And it's all happening not because of me, but because of us. You know, at the beginning when I said that I couldn't outgive God, that I wrote that blog in order to give something, and I ended up getting all of this feedback from this guy that lives in India that was telling me what a great impact I had on India. Well, if I had a great impact on India at all, it was because of all of you. You're teaching me all the time. We're engaged in this beautiful, beautiful circle of three, in this trinity, in this holy spiral that just continues to grow and blossom and flourish. And what I see happening is that this spiral is growing and blossoming and flourishing, and it's starting to include the animal kingdom and the plant kingdom, and it's moving and moving and moving, and we are becoming a beacon of light in our center of Ventura, and soon that light will radiate all around the world. So I hope you join me with this, and let us start by doing P-R-A-Y. Let us pray. Thank you. So I turn within on this beautiful day of celebrating newness and mothering and nurturing and love, and know that all of these things are here for us, seen and unseen, that the beautiful divine is that sense of love and kindness and greatness that is the truth of our existence. And so I unify with that right now, call it my own, and know that it is the truth of my existence as it is the truth of our existence. Every single person sitting in this room, every single person we hold in our hearts, every single person we can think of, every being, every animal, every rock, every tree, every star is one with love. So we acknowledge that and we celebrate that together here in this moment, and our celebrating together just anchors it into a deeper place of knowing for ourselves, revealing wholeness, which is the secret of healing. And so I stand in this wholeness with each of you, and just know that our lives are blessed and very blessed, that we are a blessing as we bless others, that we are a blessing as we practice, as we recognize what is affirming, what is denying, and name them both good, and do the work of reconciliation to create new and ever-expanding possibilities for our lives individually and collectively. Together, I claim that we are part of the healing force on this planet, in this beautiful place that we call Mother Earth, the mother of all of us, and that we are that power and that presence that is rippling more and more goodness into the world always. What a privilege it is to be able to do that, and what a privilege it is to be able to see it and speak about it and feel it on a deep level, so that it becomes more than a practice. It simply becomes who we are. So I'm just so grateful. So grateful for this teaching, so grateful for this truth, so grateful for the transformation that I know that has taken place here because of all of us working together in this spiritual vortex. I bless all paths to God, and I bless temples, synagogues, churches, mosques, ashrams, all of them, because all of them are a blessing. And with a heart that is so filled with blessedness, I say, thank you, Spirit. Thank you, God. And I release these words into the divine mystery. And together we say, and so it is. I am so blessed. I am so blessed. I am so grateful. Loving and trusting these blessings as they flow through me with such grace and such goodness. I absolutely know that Spirit creates this beautiful offering through each of us, and that it is a joy to give. It is a privilege to give. It's a privilege to know that our giving goes and blesses the world in seen and unseen ways. And so we give with that spirit of circulation in heart, mind, and being. You as you prepare your gift to become conscious of your breathing, to breathe in and breathe out and recognize that this is part of circulation. Part of the circulation that we take for granted, but that is such a vital, vital part of life, and that the whole universe breathes as one. And in the spirit of that circulation, I invite you to please repeat after me. We trust in Spirit. God is the giver and receiver of all that we are. We offer our gift. It is an inner expression of our outer abundance. Our gift blesses many and returns to be multiplied in miraculous ways. In miraculous ways. And so it is. What's going on over there? Okay.
Kind of hoping that wasn't my son screaming. It's like, you're really gonna get it if you're interrupting my singing, bro. I kind of want to dedicate this song to not just the mothers, but kind of like, you know, Helen Reddy sang this song years ago, and it was from the perspective of a single mom, I believe, would you say? But there's so many dads out there that are raising children without a mother, so they have to be a mother. So I kind of want to like dedicate this to that fringe and people who have to be it all. Okay, thank you. You and me against the world. Sometimes it feels like you and me against the world. When all the others turn their backs and walk away, you can count on me to stay. Remember when the circus came to town and you were frightened by the clowns? Wasn't it nice that to have me around, someone that you knew, someone that was big and strong and caring just for you? Against the world. Sometimes it feels like you and me against the world. And for all the times we've cried, I know that God was on our side. And when one of us is gone, and the other one is left to carry on, then our memories will have to do the memories of me and you. Memories of being with you, me and you against the world. Is left to carry on, then our memories will have to do. Memories alone will bring us through. Think of all the times of me and you, you and me against the world. Thank
you. Thank you so much for joining us today. Happy Mother's Day again to all of you. And then if you'd like some refreshments, please go through those doors there, and there's lots of great stuff for you. All right, let's do our affirmations, and then we'll sing together. Please repeat after me. I am held in Spirit's holiness.
I am held in Spirit's holiness.
Divinely guided by wisdom, courage, and love.
Divinely guided by wisdom, courage, and love.
I am always connected.
I am always connected.
I see God in everything.
I create joy on earth
as I share my blessings.
Thank you for my life.